He says, get up off of that thing. And that's what we're going to do this morning. We're going to talk about rhythm, and we're going to talk about the ways that we connect with, there we go. Am I coming through now? Okay, good. All right, so last week we talked about how music communicates emotions, or 2 weeks ago, I should say, communicates emotions even before words. You know what, before I get started in the talk here, first of all, great meditation. Thank you so much. I feel bad, and I should admit this to you, that I feel like I've lost a star, or I should hand in my spiritual community leader card, because I realized only that it was the summer solstice when you mentioned that in your meditation this morning. I pulled out my phone. Is today the summer solstice? Crap, it is. That feels like something that I probably should have tied into the talk or something as a spiritual community. Feel like I'm missing, so maybe that connection will come at some point. Obviously, there's rhythms to life, right? There's rhythms to seasons. I'm sure we'll figure this out. We'll get there. Okay. So last week, we talked about how music communicates emotion, sometimes even before words. This week, we're moving from emotion to motion, from the sounds we make to the rhythms that move us. And I've got a couple of show and tells here that I'm pretty excited about. Alex Blanksy sent me this link this past week about how these researchers at UC Berkeley mapped these brief vocal bursts that humans make and found that humans are capable of 24 emotions that they kind of mapped on this spectrum of the ways that we can communicate emotions without even words. And I'm going to give you just a little touch of what this is like. This is an interactive website, and I'm going to include this in the email this week. This is so much fun to play around with there. They found that the human voice can communicate at least 24 kinds of emotions, and they created this interactive map. And so I recorded a section of this, so you can kind of see my mouse will be moving over, and each of these sounds has been mapped onto this interactive map here. So, starting up here, amusement, embarrassment, sadness. Contempt, disgust, anger, pain, confusion, desire, ecstasy, all right, we'll end it there. That's probably a good place to stop it. It's interesting, isn't it? Like, we're capable, before we even have words, to communicate with sounds. I found that interesting. But this week we're talking about rhythm. We're talking about the ways that we embody these things. And the first thing is this, that the body keeps the beat. This is a little bit of a reference to the body keeps the score, of course, but the beat, the rhythm to music lives in our body. Melodies may get stuck in our heads, but rhythms are felt in our body. As Daniel Levitin, who's the author of the couple of books that we're referencing throughout this summer series about music, he says, our bodies like rhythm and our brains like melody and harmony. So already by nature of the way that it separates itself, we find that our brains tend to remember songs. We say that if we hear a song that it gets stuck, where? In our head, right? We say that maybe it's an earworm, something that gets in there and gets stuck in our head. But man, if there's a beat, that beat is infectious. It's toe tapping. You can't help but move. You can't help but groove to it. We found, and this was an interesting study that Shannon found for me, two-day-old babies show brain signs of rhythm prediction, this study found. Sleeping newborns listened to Bach while researchers measured brain activity. And when the rhythm unexpectedly changed, this is just the rhythm, okay? When the rhythm unexpectedly changed, babies' brains showed signs of surprise at 2 days old. Not so for melody changes. So from our very earliest stages of infancy, we respond to rhythm. That's because we're wired for, our brains are wired for pattern recognition and pattern prediction. This is the way we are made. Research shows that the songs that create the strongest response, both emotionally and intellectually, they do so by creating a reward in our brain through pattern prediction and pattern recognition. As an unfamiliar piece of music is unfolding for you in real time, there are things happening in your brain you may not even be aware of. Because our brains like looking for patterns, for categories. That's how we evolved to survive as a species, to recognize patterns. And we keep that same sense of recognition, especially tuned to the way we listen. You can tell when your closest friends or family members are having a hard day, even if they don't tell you verbally. You can tell by the sound of their voice, can't you? Even if you're on the phone, you can't see their face. You can just tell. There's a tone, we say. You have this tone to your voice. Or when we're angry, you have that tone. Don't take that tone with me. Our brains are wired for pattern recognition and pattern prediction. And so as this unfamiliar piece of music is unfolding in real time, your brain derives pleasure. It releases neurochemistry of pleasure from being able to predict how the song will continue to unfold. Your brain is kind of like that one really obnoxious kid at trivia night who knows the answer to all the questions. It's like, oh, I know this one. Even if they're wrong, your brain is very quick to jump to predictive modes because that's how we're wired. And when rhythms unfold in the way that we think, our brains derive pleasure. Research has shown that there are literally separate areas in our brain for the peak experience of music, as well as for anticipation.
Come up to the lab and see what's on the slab. I see you shiver with anticipation.
A good songwriter, good musician, works with that brain, our brain's predictive ability, and knows when to go to a certain chord or certain rhythm, and knows when to subvert those expectations. Because just like our brains are always trying to predict, we anticipate something arriving at a certain time and place, and when it doesn't, we kind of feel a little bit of a sense of like, huh, that doesn't feel right. Daniel Dennett said that the mind is fundamentally an anticipator or an expectation generator. I like that. The mind is an expectation generator. So, for example, let's do this real quick here. Does anybody have a birthday today or this weekend or really close? Who? Do you have a birthday back there? Yesterday. Okay, everybody, we're going to sing happy birthday to John back there. So here's what we're going to do. I want you to follow me. Okay, so this is kind of like old school directing style. So listen to me. We're going to sing happy birthday to John. Ready? Okay, one, two, three. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear John. Done. This is the least satisfying birthday greeting that John has ever received in his life. We're going to just leave him hanging until next year. Why does that feel so weird for us when things don't, in musical language, it's called things resolving, right? We like it when chords resolve and musical themes resolve. We don't like that feeling of like there should be something more. Like, if I were to go up here and play, which I can, and if you were to play a certain thing and not play the last note in that chord, your brain, researchers show, instinctively goes to where those notes are. We may say that we don't have rhythm, and that was a question I asked in pre-talk this morning. Do you think of yourself as someone who has rhythm? So I'm going to ask that here, just so pretend that you're outside of Fallon's studios and somebody's down there with a camera before the show's about to go on, and they're asking questions, and they come up to you and they stick a microphone in your face and they say, do you have rhythm? Do you consider yourself someone who has rhythm? If you would say yes, I want you to raise your hand. Okay? Good, good, good. Okay, hands down. Now, if you would say no, raise your hand. Okay, handful of people in there. Okay, good. It's okay. This is a safe place. We even established that it was a safe place in pre-talk. We don't have to shame us if we don't have rhythm or groove. I would tend to say that all of us have rhythm in some form or fashion. We may not be able to keep beats. We may not be able to clap on the right times. And if you're that person, you know yourself, hopefully, and you just got to clap quieter. Your kids or your grandkids have probably already told you this. This is not news. It's okay. It's okay. But we respond to rhythm. As Maya Angelou said, everything in the universe has a rhythm. Everything dances. I love that. And it's true. Everything from the most distant quasar to our heartbeats, the rhythms of the tides, the rhythms of the seasons. It's summer solstice. Did you hear that? Thank you, yeah. There are rhythms to the entire universe. Everything dances. But rhythm doesn't just move our body. It also can regulate us. It organizes us. It turns time into something we can feel, because we are metronomes with feelings, is one way you can think of yourself. Not that you keep perfect time or rhythm. I'm not saying that. But your bodies inherently have this metronomic rhythm, from the beat of your heart to the way that your brain processes information. And when you hear a beat, when you hear a good rhythm, even if you say you don't have good rhythm, and I put that in the question, I hate that, because I don't think that trying to measure, we're not testing ourselves on our ability to have rhythm. Somebody mentioned in class, was it you, that said that you got tested in grade school and failed in the rhythm department or something from your music teacher. And then we also had a 30-some-year music teacher, elementary music teacher, there she is right there, that taught music for, is it 35 years? Is that what you said? 35 years. And she's like, I wouldn't have failed you. You know, everybody can get in on this, right? You know, some of our hopefully best memories are sitting as kids in a drum circle and making beats and making sounds. A month or so ago, we did that with Carolyn Kobles when Grace and Carolyn were here. Carolyn led us in that drum circle in the other room there. It was so much fun. Like, it's fun to do that kind of stuff as an adult, because it feels like it's something you shouldn't do as an adult, which is weird. But like, why shouldn't we sit in a drum circle and just like have fun and make music? A beat lets the body anticipate what's coming next. Beats are essential for music, for songs. A beat lets the body know what the rhythm is, what's coming next. That pattern prediction and pattern recognition is a huge part of what makes music so enjoyable. It's that anticipation, knowing that there's going to be resolve. I'm going to take a stab at the pronunciation of this name, which is always difficult to do on stage here. Babatunde Olatunji. We'll go with that. I have not verified the pronunciation, but he wrote a book called The Beat of My Drum. He was a well-known African drummer who took the principles of his drumming to the West and talked about the way that African cultures and his cultural background, how they related to music. And in his book, The Beat of My Drum, he says, where I come from, we say that rhythm is the soul of life because the whole universe revolves around rhythm, as Maya Angelou said. And when we get out of rhythm, that's when we get into trouble. So he's speaking in the literal sense about the rhythm and the drumming and the way that it brings us together, but he's also speaking at a broader principle that we know when we lose our rhythm, we often lose more than just our efficiency, even though our Western culture teaches us that it's all about optimizing our time. But when we lose our rhythm, we lose our sense of groundedness, don't we? We lose our place in time. We say things like, I feel like I'm out of step. I feel like I'm out of sync with life. I feel like I've missed a beat somewhere along the way. I feel like I've lost my groove. I'm marching to the beat of someone else's drum. We use this kind of language intuitively because we know what it feels like to be out of step, out of sync. And so Baba very rightly says that all of the universe has a rhythm. And musically speaking, the person within that culture who's leading in the drum circle, and they would all share, of course, but the one who's leading is the one who's setting the rhythm and the pace. And it's all about getting into sync with the universe, with what's happening. Not that there's some kind of a universal beat. We're not going that woo-woo here. But I think in one sense, there is a rhythm to the universe that we feel intuitively when we're out of step with. And it causes us to pause and to say we need to get back into step. Third point here is that the rhythm turns me into we. Rhythm is what takes a song and makes it not just singable, but it makes it something that becomes an experience when you're in a group setting. We've all related to hearing a good song or a good groove at a hockey game or sporting events. I was just watching clips of the Norwegian fans, I believe, leading some kind of a Viking chant at the World Cup. Did anybody see that? That was intimidating AF, man. That was... You hear that and you're the other team. That's really cool. That was like a good like chant and a rhythm to it. Our Western version to something that we all respond to would be this. If I were to start and go, you would do and respond to, come on, we can. Okay, that's good, that's good. We can work on that a little bit later. Elvis said famously, rhythm is something that you either have or you don't, but when you have it all over. I would say all of us have rhythm in our soul, in our bones. We may not have been raised in a place in our culture to be able to appreciate that, and we can all grow in our appreciation of that no matter where we at in life, no matter what our age is. So in a lot of Western settings, music becomes something that you sit still and appreciate. And there's a time and a place for sitting still and appreciating. But in many African-rooted traditions, music is something that you enter. Rhythm turns listeners into participants. It turns me into we. This past week, I went to Frederick Meyer Gardens for the very first time. This was my first time there. And got to see, yeah, thank you. I was pleased too. And saw Tash Sultana, whose shirt I'm wearing here this morning. How many has heard of Tash Sultana in the room? We've got two or three hands. Okay. That was what was playing beforehand on the screen. Tash became famous about 10 or 11 years ago for recording this video in their living room in black and white with loop pedals. And they're a multi-instrumentalist, plays guitars and drums and trumpets and sax and all bass guitars, and layers this entire thing with loops and is extraordinary. And that launched their career, and they're from Australia. So I got to see them at the Meyer Gardens, and being there, there is a communal sense of movement that I love. Listening to bands and listening to bands in the general admission area, the up front and the up close. Like, you're standing, yes, your feet are gonna hurt. You might get beer spilled on you. Somebody may jostle into you, but it is so much fun to experience the movement when everybody is bouncing or moving to a song at the same time. Rhythm turns listeners into participants. In Daniel Levitin's book, This Is Your Brain on Music, he says, the urge to move to music is universal among humans. Unlike visual art, which is manifest across space, music is manifest across time. When listeners get carried away by the music, either through movement, such as dancing, or through reverie, such as trance, it is usually the temporal qualities of the music, its pulse, its tempo, and its rhythmic patterns that put us into the state. I want to point out briefly trance as a form of rhythmic connection with music. Has anyone actually entered what they would describe as like a trance-like state at an electronic festival or electronic show? We got hands in the back, a couple people there. Okay. Were you on drugs while you were doing it? No, you don't have to answer that question. House music and EDM and IDM and all these electronic forms of music with this keyed in BPM that connects with a crowd can put you into a state that is transcendent in ways. I've felt a greater sense of community with my fellow human beings. I've felt that in beautiful places in nature. I've also felt that at certain concerts. I can think back to the Joshua Tree tour with U2, and I saw him in Michigan, I saw him down in Indianapolis. And man, there's something about an entire stadium singing where the streets have no name. It just gives me chills. It was a spiritual moment on par or better than many I'd experienced in a religious setting. I've asked people throughout the week as people are sharing kind of ways that they've connected with music. And Wayne, where's Wayne at? There he is right there. Wayne shared a memory with me early in the week, and I asked him to find me the clip to send it to me. And he said that one of his earliest memories was watching this kid show up on the Ed Sullivan Show. This was a clip from May 3rd of 1964. I want you to just take a look at this. We're not going to be able to play the whole thing for license and copyrights and stuff, of course. But
it's amazing 13-year-old singing star, Stevie Wonder. So let's have a fine hand.
You to clap your hands, stomp your feet, jump up and down, do anything that you wanna do.
Hey! He was known as Little Stevie Wonder during this era, and I can only imagine the audience and Wayne hearing that for the first time and being like, wow, what is this? This just makes me want to get up and move. And it stuck with him all those years later, which is, I love that. If Fingertips Number 2, Part 2, the follow-up to that, became a number one Billboard hit in 1963 when Stevie was only 13 years old, making him one of the youngest ever artists to top the charts. I love the ways that we connect with music and sound and lyrics and melodies. There can be songs that we love for different reasons. There's grooves that are infectious. There are beats that are driving. And if I can encourage us for anything during this series, the biggest thing I'm asking you to do is to just open the expanses of your musical minds in appreciation just a little bit, and to recognize that we can rewire our brains in appreciation for music at any age and stage of our life. There's plenty of medical benefits. I can tell you all the reasons why listening to music, playing an instrument, any of those ways of connecting or consuming music is good for your brain. Music is also good communally because it turns the me into we. Yesterday, several of us were at the Silence the Violence March that went downtown Grand Haven, advocating for child safety with or child safe gun laws and locking up your guns. And afterwards, we went over to St. John's, and there was a communal sing, songs of freedom and protest, and we're going to get into that a little bit more next week. I'll tell you about that. But this week there, my encouragement for you is for you this week to hopefully get up off of that thing at some point to move yourself to some music. And it can be whatever you want. This morning we were playing When Marimba's Rhythms Start to Play, Dean Martin. We were playing that in there, you know. We were talking about the samba beats and the different beats that make you want to move. So find a song, move to it, get up off of that thing, and then think, what is the last time, when was the last time that you shook what your mama gave you? When was the last time you let yourself cut loose in a way that you didn't care what you look like? The old proverbial dance like nobody's looking. Yes, people are looking, and we can't imagine that they're not there, but maybe in the silence of our own home, in our own bedrooms, we can move a little bit. Or when was the last time that you had friends over simply to listen to music? I've been doing that recently and absolutely love that. To get friends together for the sole purpose of just listening to songs together and appreciating music. So I want you to email me any stories about how music has shaped your life in any way or form or fashion. This can be some of your earliest musical memories. It can be a song or an artist that connected with you in a specific time. Write it relatively short so I can summarize it or share it or use it in some way during this series. But email me your stories about how music has moved you. And then I mentioned that I was at an opportunity where there was music used for protest. And next week we have the firebrand Molly, who is going to be both singing and performing her music and also serving double duty as speaker that week as well. This is kind of like an SNL when there's like a guest artist who does both host duty as well. So I've been told this has been done in the past. This has not been done since I've been here. So this is going to be pretty exciting. Molly is going to be taking this conversation further with a talk that she's titled Soul Feels Free, looking at music from the African diaspora and how it has helped people survive, celebrate, resist, and imagine freedom together. She has some amazing, amazing things that come out of her lived experience and the way that she has used music in her own life, in her own world. So I'm really, really excited about Molly coming next week. Thank you for being a part of this talk and this series. And let's have Sammy back up here. I was chuckling to myself when, you can come on up, when we landed on the schedule. I was like, okay, we were talking about rhythm, and we invited dear Sammy, who I love and have seen so many places, and she is just the most calming and relaxing artist I can think of. But yet, her music obviously embodies rhythm in various different ways. So thank you for joining us, Sammy. It's always good to have you.
Thanks. So much.